And welcome to the Poetry Show, broadcast here on Enlightened Radio at www.enlightenedradio.org. And also, you can, our player is also available along with usually what's currently playing on the radio at player.enlightenedradio.org. We also have a long list of our podcasts at podcasts.enlightenedradio.org. A separate page has a list of the podcasts and many of the programs over the past 4 or 5 years by Fanny Crawford and Stasia Ziolkowski, The Storytelling Hour. And that can be found on talltales.enlightenedradio.org. This morning, I want to thank my good friend and the inspiration for this program, Janet Harrison, who will be joining us on other Wednesdays, but not this morning. And nonetheless, she contributed $50 toward my, I guess I call it the Macular Degeneration Solidarity Fund. She gave me the $50 at Amazon Kindle Books so that I could order poetry for the show and, enlarge the print a little bit so I didn't have to have a magnifying glass and talk into the microphone at the same time trying to read fine print in some of the books that I have, some of which also were provided by Janet. We're holding Janet in the light this morning as she, consults with physicians about the things that old people consult physicians about. And see her next week, I think. Or maybe it's the week after, but soon. This morning is one of the, a great poet that I think Janet found this poet for me years ago. But I may have found it on, it may have been one of the ones I found on my own. I was out of the habit of reading poetry other than, Bob Dylan's lyrics and stuff, much as, with a career in technology and union organizing, among other things. And, but I came back into it when I met Janet when we located here in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, from where we are broadcasting, the Red Caboose Studio, 25425 zip code. you can reach the host, by the way, of our anytime at host@enlightenedradio.org. The poet we're going to consider first here is Jane Kenyon, born in Ann Arbor, Michigan, 1947. She's just a year younger than me, and she earned both her BA and her MA from the University of Michigan while a student at the University of Michigan. She met her future husband, the poet Donald Hall, who taught her there, or who taught there. Well, of course, that raises a number of interesting grown-up questions. nonetheless, she married Donald Hall, and with him, she moved with him to Eagle Pond Farm, a New Hampshire farm that had been in Donald Hall's family for generations. She published 4 volumes of poetry during her life. She worked as a translator, and I'm not quite sure here what was her preferred language. Looks like it was Russian because she spent time translating the poems of Anna Akhmatova, a Russian revolutionary and poet. Fell out of favor eventually with Joseph Stalin, but... but did not. I don't think she was. She wasn't executed. So, you know, all the best for her. Anyway, despite her relatively small output, Jane Kenyon was very highly lauded by critics throughout her lifetime. As a fellow poet Carol Musk remarked in the New York Times when describing Kenyon's book, The Boat of Quiet Hours, she wrote, "These poems surprise beauty at every turn and capture truth at its familiar New England slant." Here in Keats' terms, referring to, of course, John Keats, the English poet, romantic poet, is a capable poet. Indeed, Kenyon's work has often been compared with that of the English romantic poet John Keats, probably one of the reasons why I like her so much, since I loved Keats' just beautiful precision imagery that nonetheless were, while being quite discreet and precise, just evoked feeling and or thought or your imagination on practically every word. Jane Kenyon has a similar art. It's interesting, she's a translator. Her poetry itself has been translated into many other languages, and she's a kind of poet for which that works. Despite having a very precise language herself in English, she makes the transition into other languages, or so the critics read, transparently, or appears to be transparent. I'm not sure about that. As that translations of other poets that work well in translation, like Pablo Neruda, for example, or Rainer Maria Rilke. In German, so that's an art that's hard to define. But Jane Kenyon, that works for her too. She died fairly young, at 1995, I believe, of cancer. I was living in New England at the time, but I did not get an opportunity to meet her, even though. Had I known that she had written a Labor Day poem, I might have sought her out more. The poem I'm going to start out reading is called After an Illness, Walking the Dog. And the after the illness intro is setting a context all on its own. But I'm going to read through it, and then we're going to come back a little bit, because this is an extraordinary poem. And I think if you sort of rest your mind a minute and hear it out, you can even in the first reading, you can grab a number of the beautiful touches, poetics, that linger on nearly every line. After an illness, walking the dog. Wet things smell stronger. And I suppose his main regret is that he can sniff just one at a time. In a frenzy of delight, he runs way up the sandy road, scored by freshets after 5 days of rain. Every pebble gleams, every leaf. When I whistle, he halts abruptly, steps in a circle, swings his extravagant tail. Then he rolls and rubs his muzzle in a particular place while the drizzle falls without cease. And Queen Anne's lace and goldenrod bend low. The top of the logging road stands open. And light. Another day, before hunting starts, we'll see how far it goes, leaving word first at home, because the footing is ambiguous. Soaked and muddy, the dog drops, panting, and looks up with what amounts to a grin. It's so good to be uphill with him. nicely winded, and looking down on the pond. A sound commences in my left ear, like the sound of the sea in a show. A downward, vertiginous drag comes with it. Time to head home. I wait until we're nearly out to the main road to put him back on the leash. And he, the designated optimist, imagines to the end that he is free. So, you know, one of the things that's kind of interesting about, there's a lot of interesting aspects of Jane Kenyon's poetry, but she has a nice gift of using fairly plain language and with some details, which you may or may not, you know, may or may not stand out to you. But at the end of almost every verse here, she adds a very interesting poetic, a resonating thing without the use of rhyme. There's not even very much internal rhyme. The phrases she used are mostly familiar to any reader practically. But then she adds at the end of the of each verse, or at least almost every verse, I call it a step up, or maybe it's a step in, where you've heard what she had to say, you've heard the description, or you're listening, and then she doubles down and she adds a little layer that makes you feel more closer to actually being there and seeing what she's seeing. So let's do this. Let's try the first verse again and see how that works. Wet things, well, she's speaking from the dog's point of view, of course, here. Wet things smell stronger. And I suppose his main regret is that he can sniff just one at a time. How many times have you seen your puppy do that? In a frenzy of delight, he runs up the sandy road, scored by freshets after 5 days of rain. Okay. Every pebble gleams, every leaf. That's what I call the step up there. And you've been given the scene, and then, okay, you see that he runs, and you get, she said something about the rain, but when you see how each pebble gleams, every leaf, it's like all of a sudden she sort of gave you a little microscope with which to look at what she had just said. I had a creative writing teacher once in graduate school in English that used a similar technique in trying to get people to learn how to do descriptive writing and then move from a descriptive writing into something deeper, okay? Something, a different dimension, same object, something different. And what he would do is he would put a great big potted plant in the middle of the classroom. I think we had about 10 students. It was a graduate school back in the days when you didn't have to do, you know, 100 people in the classroom. Anyway, and he says, so I want you to turn in tomorrow 3,000 words on this plant here. And he also offered up a short, he did help us identify what actual plant it was. But beyond that, no, we were supposed to do our own thing. Okay, so, you know, that was an effort. 3,000 words in a night was kind of an effort in those days. You had to do it on a typewriter and correct your typing. You didn't have any word processors. You could write it out by hand, but the professor made it absolutely clear that if he can't read it, you're getting a failing grade. So you pretty much had to type it. Anyway, we came back in, and then in the next class, he had the same potted plant in the middle of the room, but he handed out a little miniature magnifying glass to each of the students, and he says, okay, now tomorrow, or the next class, 3,000 words on the plant, but now through the magnifying glass. And, of course, you got, you know, really you had a very different kind of experience there going on. And so I think that's a little bit of what happens here at the end of this verse. You get a little step up where you, she told you, and now she lets you feel it differently. She goes a little deeper. So let's continue on. When I whistle, he halts abruptly and steps in a circle, swings his extravagant tail. Then he rolls and rubs his muscle in a particular place. Okay, so far just plain language. And he, and the importance of she has a relationship with the dog. When I whistle, he halts. Steps in a circle, swings his extravagant tail. A sign of relationship. Then he rolls and rubs his muscle in a particular place. All right. While then here's the step up. While the drizzle falls without cease, and Queen Anne's lace and goldenrod bend low. So not only has the rain been described, but you see it yourself in the bending Queen Anne's lace and goldenrod. And she does that all through the poem, and with exceptional power at the last verse. A sound commences in my left ear, like the sound of the sea in a shell. A downward vertiginous drag comes with it. Time to head home. I wait until we're nearly out to the main road to put him back on the leash. And he, the designated optimist, imagines to the end that he is free. So there, the step up is kind of cosmic, right? And what is the time, the ominous sort of, I'm about to take off here. I'm about to leave the mundane detail and planet. Right after the downward vertiginous drag comes with it, time to head home. It says, I wait until we're ready out to the main road to put him back on the leash. And he imagines to the end that he is free. And so the original context of illness. We'll do this one. There you go.
Traveling in the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true
for that interruption there in the background. As you can see, this is a raw recording. Anyway, Jane Kenyon, a transcendent poet, and I could read one more by her. Why don't we do that? Because she's just so good. That this one's called Alone for a Week. Now, okay, you know, the context with it, she writes mostly pretty personal poems. I mean, they could be about somebody else, but it's pretty clear that there's a lot of evidence that they're about her and her husband and where they lived in northern New Hampshire. And and when she talks about the pond, it's most likely the pond where she lives, which is on an estate inherited by her husband from his family. And so that context is it. So alone for a week is, you know, alone for a week in a family context. Well, I washed a little clothes and hung them out to dry. And then I went uptown and busied myself all day. The sleeve of your best shirt rose ceremonious when I drove in. Our night clothes twined and untwined in a little gust of wind. For me, it was getting late. For you, wherever you were, not so. The harvest moon was full, but sparse clouds made its light not quite reliable. The bed on your side seemed wide and flat as Kansas. Your pillow plump, cool, and allegorical. Meaning, standing for some moral or absolute value. and you know, you beg to ask, well, what, I wonder which allegorical figure, allegorical value or virtue or seven deadly sin or is reflected in the bed on your side seemed wide and flat as Kansas, your pillow plump, cool. And allegorical, yes. So the two sides of alone, you can get a bunch of done stuff done by the absence of distractions, and then you can end up looking at the empty side of the bed. The other poet I wanted to introduce you to today is Joy Harjo. Now, a very different kind of poet, and although fairly contemporaneous with Joy Harjo, excuse me, with Jane Kenyon. Let me get the my book up here. While we're doing that, it's a she's a Native American poet, and let me see here. Yeah, here we go. She was appointed United States Poet Laureate in June 2019, and is the first Native American poet laureate in the history of the position, which typically was only used by Democratic presidents for some reason. I don't know. Is that because poets are liberal? What? I don't know. Anyway, she was poet laureate in 2019. Although, wouldn't that, so that was the, gosh, that's the middle of Trump's presidency. Huh. Well, see, what I just said has been a bit rebuffed. We'll have to look into that later. But in any event, she's a member of the Creek Nation. There's a Creek name for it that I can't pronounce, or that I don't know how to right now. And she belongs to the Osh-Vipof. I don't know what that means. She received a BA from the University of New Mexico before earning a master's in fine arts from the Iowa Writers Workshop in 1978. She is a poet, musician, and playwright. The author of numerous books of poetry, including Weaving Sundown in a Scarlet Light, 50 Poems for 50 Years. That's a W.W. Norton publication, and American Sunrise, The Woman Who Fell to the Sky, and numerous other books. She has a memoir, and she received numerous awards, especially the Wallace Stevens Award for Proven Mastery in the Art of Poetry from the American Academy of Poets. And here's a comment by Chancellor Alicia Ostreicher on Joy Harjo's poetry. Throughout her extraordinary career as poet, storyteller, musician, memoirist, playwright, and activist, Joy Harjo has worked to expand our American language, culture, and soul. A Creek Indian and student of First Nation history, Harjo is rooted simultaneously in the natural world, in earth, especially the landscape of the American Southwest, and in the spirit world, aided by these redemptive forces of nature and spirit, incorporating native traditions of prayer and myth into a powerfully contemporary idiom. Her visionary justice-seeking art transforms personal and collective bitterness to beauty, fragmentation to wholeness, and trauma to healing. She plays sax, you know, in her and flutes in the Aerodynamics Band, which is the name of her band. and previously with a group called Poetic Justice. Anyway, she's quite extraordinary. And I want to, if I can once again open up the meaning of life here. Here we go. Okay. I just used my little budget from Janet to buy one of Joy Harjo's Kindle books. Are we loading here or aren't we? I say, are we loading here or aren't we? And it doesn't reply very well. Okay, we're waiting for it to load. And I think I'll just pause the tape. All right, here we are. We're back again. Joy Harjo, her poem called Break My Heart. And it opens the her book called The American Sunrise, for which she won numerous awards. Break My Heart. There are always flowers, love cries, or blood. Someone is always leaving by exile, death, or heartbreak. Mystery is blind. But wills you to untie the cloth in eternity. Police with their guns cannot enter here to move us off our lands. History will always find you and wrap you in its thousand forms. Some will lift from the earth without wings. Another will fall from the sky through the knots of a tree. Chaos is primordial. All words have roots here. You will never sleep again, though you will never stop dreaming. The end can only follow the beginning. And it will zigzag through time, governments, and lovers. Be whoever you are, even if it kills you. Even if you live, break my heart. Why don't you? Joy Harjo. And we're going to stop there for I think, today. And play a little tune on the way out. Maybe we'll... I sometimes tremble at the... you know, what one should... is actually able to play. We'll do this one right here.
Will you remember me like the circled stones on the ancient hills where you walk alone, where the wind?
You're listening to The Poetry Show on Enlightened Radio. www.enlightenedradio.org. Take care. It's late. Everything comes next.
Will you remember me as your airplane flies over foreign seas and breaking skies like a perfect child? You can't bear to leave in your last long days. Will you remember me? Will you remember me on the edge of life where time runs slow, where some can fly in these shuttered rooms where we say goodbye?